This is a production of Dirty Mo Media. The Dale Jr. Download. Hey, everybody, it's Dale Jr. back again for another episode of the Dale Jr. Download. Man, this is going to be a great one. Mike Davis, my co-host, is here. Hey, Mike.
What's up, bud?
Man, it's just another day.
Just another day.
Well, not really. We got Marcus Smith coming in here, and, you know, he's not a superstar race car driver. He's not one of the old guys from the history of the sport coming in. He's an owner of these racetracks. Just come off of an interesting weekend at Bristol, where they covered the racetrack in dirt. He's going to tell us all about that weekend, why they went ahead with the announcement to race again there next year with dirt. I think he's got a few other things to talk to us about when it comes to Nashville, Atlanta Motor Speedway, and there's a few other bombs in here. So
yeah.
I'm excited about it. Schultz is here. Leah's here. We're going to have a great show. Ask Junior, presented by Xfinity, will be toward the tail end of the show, one of my favorite parts of the podcast. Let's get started.
Brush some dirt.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, dirt. Wow.
Yes.
I saw that promotion, the dirt in a jar. So, I mean, you know, where, what corner we're talking about here? What top is that?
That was probably in turn four.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
In a Sugarlands jar.
Yes.
Look
absolutely.
At that.
I was like, man, I'd rather have some of that creamsicle, that orange electric.
Not the dirt.
The electric orange with a Sun-Kiss. Give me some of that.
Look at that.
I know you might want to mix that in with your sipping cream.
It's got some moisture in there. Y'all had a lot this weekend, right?
Oh, yeah,
we did. No shortage of that.
We saved that up. Special jar. we're selling those for Speedway Children's Charities.
Yeah.
And, there's a few jars left.
How many did you scoop up? How many jars do you think?
I think it was 2,500.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You got a partnership with Sugarlands through the racetrack at Bristol. Sugarlands is a distillery, and they are in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I visited there, and they got a great little business and some great people, Ned and the whole company. They're good people to be associated with. So.
Yeah, they are. They did a great job. They have this bar at the Speedway that's all decked out. They've got a still.
I heard it was busy.
It was
bar.
Very busy. Yeah. Every delay is a good opportunity to go over there.
Well, how much moonshine did you drink just to get room for the dirt?
I was working.
No drinking?
Yeah.
Not this weekend?
No. That
Was there a point of this weekend you thought about drinking?
No. You know, we had a great weekend. It was awesome. It was awesome. But,
at what point in the weekend is there a moment, I guess, where you're losing patience or there's frustration or you got to tell yourself to like pull it together and cause you're a positive guy. You tend to like, this is going to work out. Everything's going to work out. Everything's going to end the right way. We're going to do this and it's going to, everything's going to, you never shut the door on things ending the way that you envision. And, I wonder if there's, you know, in racing when we're, you know, so for example, like a race car driver, race team, there's moments when we lose it, right?
Yeah.
We lose hope. We lose. Yep. We get frustrated. There's bad communication and back and forth. And
sure.
I wonder. I think that is this weekend probably the hardest y'all have ever been pushed.
I mean, it was tough, and I will say that I got to give all the credit to Jerry Caldwell, who's the general manager of Bristol Motor Speedway,
he's a good
and
dude.
Steve Swift, who just worked tirelessly from the beginning. So they may have reached that point, but I have full confidence in them and our whole team just did such a great job. And all the people that work with Jerry and Steve just did an awesome job to pull everything together. And I'll tell you what the difference is between this weekend and the frustrations of weather and maybe what we had last year in Texas is that we had two big sunshine icons on Monday and Tuesday.
You knew it.
Right. I mean, so that was kind of our stopgap. And even though we wanted to run as scheduled, at least we had this sort of assurance that Monday and Tuesday were all sunshine and, you know, like 1% chance of rain.
Right.
So that kind of makes it a little bit encouraging and tolerable.
Is there a point, though, y'all have, you know, the creek crests the banks and you had major
time.
Flooding in
oh,
the
yeah.
parking lots and you know cars and campers underwater and There was other things going on aside from just your concern of the surface of the racetrack. Is there – I mean, I don't know that we've ever really – I can't remember. I mean, the snow weekend was pretty wild at Bristol, but that came and went.
Right.
I don't really remember. The Texas weekend was a disaster, tough. Yeah. I remember one year in Michigan, we were there till Tuesday or Wednesday with just rain pouring all through Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
I remember some rain delays that were difficult, but this seemed to be on next level.
It was a lot of rain in a short period of time, lots of flooding, and just a lot to deal with. And you just have to deal with it. You know, it's just another challenge. And we have such a great team, and we've got great relationship with all the community, first responders. The fire department came out and helped us to clean up the parking lots and the grandstands. Just so much great teamwork from everybody.
But how does that happen? I mean, like, get into the weeds a little bit, because so when it's monsooning like it did, you got a creek overflowing. Now, I know you've got the weather situation, the sunny forecast coming up, so you've got that, like you said, a bump stop. But what is the procedures, and how involved do you get with Jerry Caldwell and Steve Swift? Do you get the team together? Do y'all sit there? Where do you go?
Yeah.
What do you say?
I ask a lot of questions. I can't overstate what great confidence I have in my team. And that's really what got us into doing a dirt race at Bristol. A few years ago, Jerry brought up the idea to me to have a dirt race at Bristol in the spring. And I said, man, I don't think so. I think that might be a little bit too crazy.
Wow. So it was too crazy for you.
At the time, it was.
That's crazy.
And then, you know, it was a different time a few years ago. But then a year before last, talked to Steve about it, talked to Jerry about it. When Steve Swift said, yeah, we can do it, you know, I've got full confidence in him and his whole team to be able to pull it off, Jerry and his whole team. And all I have to do is say, yes, let's do it. And, you know, there's some discussions and a lot of lobbying. We talked to NASCAR a good bit, and huge, you know, props to NASCAR and all the partners and all the teams involved to be able to pull that off. But, you know, when it's raining, the biggest thing you have to remember is we can't control the rain. We do feel responsible, I tell you. I mean, it's weird. We're not responsible for the rain, but we do feel responsible.
Feel bad, yeah.
Yeah, we feel terrible. But we just know that we've got to dig in and do the very best we can with whatever we have to deal
with. So y'all ran a dirt race at Bristol with the late models and so forth back 15 years ago, 18 years ago, whenever that was, 2001 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it take so long for this to happen again?
It was World of Outlaws. And it was about 20 years ago, and it took so long because it was a big mess. I mean, it really was one of those things. We did it one time. We ended up, Jeff Bird was president of the track at the time, and he said, I don't know how many swimming pools we had to clean out, you know, around the community. Pressure washing homes.
Okay, okay. So that I didn't think about that. So this cloud of dust and dirt.
It was a lot worse for the Outlaws.
You didn't have to worry about just your property. Like, you got neighbors complaining or locals complaining.
Oh, yeah.
You got to worry about that this time around?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It looked bad at times, of course, on TV, but
back then we didn't have sort of the grandstands quite as high, maybe.
A little bit of that.
And it was just worse. Keeping some of the dirt inside.
It was just worse. We learned a lot on how to take care of the dirt. And, you know, yesterday we ran two races on a dirt track and in the daytime. That's not normal. That's
not a great scenario.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. Yeah. So I think for all those things considered, the conditions were really fantastic. And if you watch a lot of dirt racing, you know that we were up against a big challenge.
So if I got a swimming pool, I'm a couple miles down the road and my
call
swimming pool there. I call the track and they're like, "We got you. We're responsible.
We feel a responsibility." I don't
that's
know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's crazy.
My El Camino is covered in dirt. You boys better get down here now.
Is that Amy's El Camino or yours?
That's right.
My wife's. Yeah, I wouldn't know.
Amy's fine with it.
I just washed mine.
That's a good point, though. The dust. I did see the pictures, and it does create quite a cloud, doesn't it?
It does. But I got to the track on Wednesday, and I was amazed at how clean everything was. Our team did such an awesome job cleaning everything up. I actually called ahead to Jerry and said, "Hey, I'm coming up. how dirty is it? Do I need to wear boots or anything? Because they had just finished up with late models. And he said, no, it's pretty good. I got up there. I could not believe how clean everything was. It was just amazing.
I was watching from the race, and I could see the, like, as the race got going, like, the first several rows of the grandstands were getting dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. Like, that dust is sort of getting blanketing down on the racetrack and outside of the, you know, you could tell it's, I was like, man, they're going to have a lot of work to do to get it cleaned up. But y'all got more races to go. Like, like, you know, after the race on Monday, that's not the end of dirt racing at Bristol this year.
Right. So in a couple of weeks, we've got the Outlaws coming, and that's going to be a good show. Should be a lot of fun. We're still selling tickets for it. And then that will be the end of the dirt. And it'll take us about, you know, 6 weeks to clean everything up.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
That's it.
I would have thought longer.
Well, so, it might be, but I mean, we think it's going to be 6 weeks. We started with the first loads of dirt back the first week of January.
Mm-hmm.
So that took a lot of time, a lot of effort to put that whole track together.
You were talking that there was a whole process. Dale was telling me about it, the whole process of even picking the dirt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, give us a little insight into that.
So we had about 32 different sites that we sampled. And, you know, when you sample it, you take some dirt. People were sending us dirt to analyze, and you're looking at the various chemical properties of it. And, you want just the right mix. And so that's what we did.
Did you learn too much about that? I mean, I would be, if that was going on, I'd ask my guys, I'd be like, why does the dirt matter, right? I mean, certainly there's a difference between sand and mud.
Right.
But what dirt is dirt, like red clay, you know, there are dirt tracks all over this country. And what is the preference?
There is a lot of preference and a lot of opinion.
Right.
So everybody in dirt, you know, the closer you are to it, I think the more expertise you have. And the more opinions you have about it, dirt is very finicky, and it's different across the country. And, you know, it's one of the – certain people have certain opinions of the type of dirt. Some people want the black dirt track. Some people want the red clay dirt track. Some, you know, it's a really interesting thing, and it's an art. I'm not sure how much – I mean, there's a lot of science, but there's also a lot of art in it.
Yeah,
was the problem with the World Outlaws? Was it the wrong kind of dirt? I mean that seriously. Like, was that one of the things that made that dirt get so far out? Like,
maybe. I mean, it's one of those things that you learn. So one of the things that we learned from that is that we needed to have this layer of sawdust to start the track. So the first layer, it's like a multi-layer cake. We started with sawdust.
What made you decide to do that versus not doing that?
Well, these aren't things that I knew about in advance. They're things that I found out about from Steve Swift and from his team. So the big reason, there's two reasons. One is it's a better cleanup. So that sawdust layer helps to just kind of create a barrier between the track surface and the dirt. And then it also helps to retain some moisture. So if you put the sawdust down, I think we had about 5 or 6 inches of sawdust on the track, which is a lot when you scatter it over a half mile track. Mm-hmm. And then the different layers of dirt. The first layer was dirt from that original Outlaws race that we had stockpiled on the track property.
What?
Yeah.
You had this dirt sitting around for
vintage
20 years?
Vintage dirt. It was vintage dirt.
Never,
all dirt's been around a long time.
That's why you keep everything, Mike. Even dirt.
On the track property, y'all had the old dirt that you just kept?
Absolutely.
Because you didn't have anywhere to put it, or you thought there would be a day when you'd want it again?
We might need it again. And we'll take all the dirt from this race, and we'll put it on the property, and you know we'll seed it, cover it over with grass, and save it.
That's
for it.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And care for it.
Yeah. And we'll use it again next year.
You announced that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There was another reason why y'all put the sawdust down. You talked about the cleanup, but the it takes care of the track surface as well, the concrete.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't have that surface kind of a barrier, it just kind of seeps in to the surface. So and it's a lot harder to clean up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hoping though that somehow this concrete surface would not survive.
I knew you were going there.
When will we know?
Well, We'll see in a few weeks.
I can't wait to find out whether the concrete has failed to survive this or not.
All of those experts that you're getting gleaning all this information for dirt. Do you need him to talk about the concrete at all?
Because I need Dale to tell us some more concrete engineering.
Man,
well, you mean I can start calling the paving companies now and get some quotes.
Okay,
that's right.
Just in case,
just to check,
sample.
We got to be ready.
Absolutely,
you never know
if we need to get pavement in there fast.
That's right.
So middle of the race, you guys announced to everyone. So, but this was kind of I wasn't there, but I can imagine this was really kind of a cool moment.
I sat in your seat, by the way.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, I was supposed to go. Yeah, I was supposed to go, and the weather. Well, we were going to go Sunday, and the weather was bad, so we ended up not going.
Yeah.
And then I had something yesterday, so I couldn't go. But I hope it was a good view. I'm sure it was one of the best.
It was. It was great.
the race, they didn't have live stops, right? So they would pull the cars down after each stage and shut the motors off. So there was sort of this intermission. Kind of a neat – I bet it was kind of a cool atmosphere, like a halftime.
It was nice, yeah. Time to talk and, go to the concession stand.
Right, and I believe that was a time when y'all decided to announce that y'all were going to run this dirt race again next year. Everybody was sitting there on social media as I was following the race saying, it's a one-time deal. Nobody said anything about this happening again. It was a lot of work. I don't see them going through this process again. This is, with the rain and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And then there y'all go in the middle of the race and drop that bomb.
Yeah.
Y'all hadn't heard anything from a driver after, post-race. You hadn't heard really – you hadn't had a fan vote or any kind of – you haven't checked the temperature of the fans or their –
Maybe we're on to the reason why you did it before they had a chance to do all that, right?
So I was really surprised.
Yeah.
What a time to announce something like that. What's the decision behind that?
Well, at the track, when we announced it, fans cheered.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm certain that it's positive.
Yeah.
But I just was surprised by the choice to do it then.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, it's one of those things that going into this, I didn't know if we would do it again or not.
Going into
the race yesterday?
No, going into...
When did y'all decide, man, we're going to announce we're doing this again?
We talked about it on Saturday and Sunday when it was raining.
And, wait a second.
In the worst of times.
Yeah.
In the moment when you think they would be going, we're never doing this again. No
way. You made the decision to do it again that late? I mean, in this past weekend, y'all. That's when y'all made the decision to do it again next year?
We were thinking, I was thinking, if this works, we're going to do it again. If it doesn't work, now we know.
You based it, though, you hadn't had a race. You're in the middle of a torrential downpour. You got flooding outside the racetrack. You based this off of what you saw in practice and so forth?
I was 99% sure and had everything ready to go on Sunday. And once we got the first 20 or 30 laps in, you knew it could be raced by the cup cars, then ready to go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't there a conversation with NASCAR that at least has to be had?
Yeah, we talked with them, and they were very supportive. And I can't say enough thanks to Steve O'Donnell and Steve Phelps and Jim France and just the whole team at NASCAR, how they have supported this. And again, that goes back to my team. I mean, I've got confidence in them, and it gives other people confidence in us to do some of these crazy things.
I'm still fascinated by this. Okay, so wait a second. Did anybody on their side go, wait a second, Steve or Marcus, we're in the middle of a downpour right now. I mean, did anybody ask questions on the logic behind it? Because, I mean, listen, we're all glad that it happened.
I guess. But, I mean, maybe some people did.
But not to you?
No.
Wow. And so y'all just said, heck with it, let's announce it during the race.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
It was, and I love the cheers. I was talking to somebody else, and it flashes up on the big TV in the middle, and you hear this... crowd erupt. That's cool.
I think the best, I mean, you could, there's so many positives to making the decision to make that announcement right there in the middle of the race. You got a captive TV audience listening to that very announcement. You got everybody that's bought a ticket at the track there to hear it as well. You couldn't have had a better attention span to try to reach as many people as possible.
And we already got about 5,000 tickets renewed.
Yeah.
Just in the last 24 hours.
Let me tell you what the most impressive part about this is. I mean, the announcing is great, but I'm telling you, if he's making the decision, I'm sorry, you and your team are making the decision over the weekend when all this stuff was happening, there is an insane ability to to tune out the static, which is by absolutely going on while armchair quarterbacks, our own podcast, Door Bumper Clear, may have been one of them, talking about how, though, this is what happens when you got non-dirt track people running dirt races and whatever. I mean, like, that conversation was going on. You guys have an ability to tune that out and make this decision like this during this weekend before the race is even run and complete.
Who are the non-dirt track people?
Well, that's a great point, because you've got dirt tracks. You've got dirt tracks, right, for sure. Yeah. So, but this is interesting. How do you tune out the naysayers, the devil's advocates, whatever you want to call it, to be able to reach a decision like that?
I learned something huge when we put in the big TV at Charlotte, big Speedway TV. That was one of the, you know, it was absolutely the biggest fan amenity in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have the biggest TV in the world put in, where we were, you know, watching these little postage stamp TVs in comparison in the infield for the fans, we thought that was good when you could have a 30-foot TV. We put in a 200-foot TV, and we had people complain about it. And at that point, I realized, can't make everybody happy. And, you know, that's when I just kind of turned it off and realized, you know, I want to know what fans think, but I also need to remember that you just can't make everybody happy, and that's just part of life.
Yeah,
and you got to swing. You got to swing for it. If you're going to hit it, you got to swing, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The dirt race felt like a swing. I mean, like, even when you guys announced that you were doing it, you know, I'm pretty sure that we even go, what's going on here? Bristol running, putting dirt? You know, why mess up a good thing? Because y'all got it.
What, are you crazy?
Yeah.
This was like my idea.
This was your idea. Oh, yeah, we had... Jason, you pulled something. Is it? Hold on. Are we taking credit for this?
It might be. We found a clip from when Marcus was on the show in 2019 talking about Bristol dirt. So I'm going to play that for y'all.
Okay, right now. Let's hear it.
The Dale's idea was to rip up the concrete at Bristol and run a dirt race.
Yes.
In Cup, and
the first Bristol race of the year, run the dirt race.
Yeah, and then pave it asphalt.
Wait, when did he come to you with that idea? It had to be after driving.
No, that was on the plane to Vegas.
Yeah. Oh,
before we got there. Before we got there.
Now that he doesn't have to drive it, he's got all kinds of ideas. They do a boat race in the infield next time, right?
That's true.
Yeah. I was down. I was for it.
There you go.
What
good job, heck? Dale.
Dale, did you tell him to do it again next year or something? Wow, okay.
Picture this. It's blazing hot outside and you need to head to work. You get into your car and turn on the AC to get the cold air pumping as soon as possible, but it doesn't work. Instead, blowing hot air out of your vents and directly into your face. No, your car doesn't hate you. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the air conditioning system, and there's an easy all-in-one solution that will restore your cold air in no time.
There's no need to go to the shop and pay lots of money when you can save time and money recharging yourself with AC Pro Recharge Kits. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience. And the AC Pro app offers clear, vehicle-specific instructions to help you get the job done in less than 10 minutes.
So pick up an AC Pro Recharge Kit at any store selling auto products and confidently restore your car's cold air yourself today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
I think people are talking about, you know, how much work this was. You got to put the track together, then you got to tear it apart. You guys were pretty clever in this particular instance, where in 20 years ago you had a World Outlaws race and that was it, right?
Right.
This year you've got the dirt late models, the Cup race, the truck race, then you have the winged World Outlaw cars. So you've got like a month of racing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Multiple opportunities for revenue and ticket sales. And you can get a lot more bang for your buck out of the big effort to put that track together, right?
That's so true, yeah. And it was so cool to see what happened with the late models the week, 2 weeks before. I mean,
everybody coming to run.
All over the country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so to come and race Bristol, if you are, you know, in those classes that were invited, it's a pretty special opportunity. So I think that's why people kind of dropped what they were doing and they came to Bristol, and we had 1,400 cars the last 2 weeks, before NASCAR.
Yeah.
So, and I think coming up with the Outlaws in a couple of weeks, we'll have a big turnout, and it'll be really fun, and all those people will be able to say, I raced Bristol.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Where, how far ahead, I know y'all have announced that you're racing at Bristol in the dirt next spring. How far ahead beyond that, or what is your gut feeling about the future of this racetrack? So I didn't see y'all announcing to run it again next year because of the work, but I certainly have a hard time imagining you're going to alternate this year after, you know, this track from dirt to concrete every year going forward. I think at some point you have to make a business decision to make a choice
right.
on what the future of the track looks like. So yeah. Where's your gut?
You know, I think so next year the race will be on dirt, and the question is, what about the cars? So, and I don't know.
The new car.
Is it going to be the new car? I think it's going to be the new car. You know, what changes will be made? It'll be interesting. That'll be, I think, the next part of this decision for NASCAR and the teams to think about. Everybody's got thoughts on windshield, no windshield, forced air versus, you know, the under the car and that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
All of those things steer the future of the track.
I think it does.
And the future of Bristol running dirt.
I think it does, yeah. It's a part of it. And, you know, we'll kind of see how it goes.
Do you watch the trucks at Knoxville coming up with curiosity from a business standpoint?
I've watched the race. I've been there several times. Was, you know, big fan of that. And I really enjoyed it.
You talked about owning three dirt tracks. I mean, do you think it's out of the realm of possibility to imagine taking a date to a true purpose-built dirt track one day?
We're open to that. If it's something that that NASCAR wants to do and it works out, we'd be open to it. I think you know, Tony and Roger have done a great job with it in Eldora and kind of, you know, paved the way to put the trucks on dirt and cup on dirt. Yeah. And so we'll see.
One of the things I think that I was most happy to see was the support from the industry about the work y'all did. That's not uncommon, but I think I haven't ever seen it at the levels
that, I agree.
That I saw this weekend.
100%. On Friday, I was blown away with the positivity from the whole NASCAR world. That was really, really encouraging.
It's helpful.
It was so helpful. And just encouraging, you know, to me and our whole team. Everybody was just really on cloud nine, that so many drivers, so many people in the sport were saying all these positive things. It made us feel really good. And, you know, in spite of the rain, we felt like, you know, this is, we've got support here. And that was, and recognizing the risks and the expense and the effort that went into it, that felt really good.
With the new track agreements and so forth, you have mentioned a couple times in this conversation how important NASCAR is in the discussion and agreement. What is the conversation with NASCAR like when you as a track owner want to do anything different outside of, you know, what the schedule is? I mean, you have to go in and line up these dates and schedules. But, I mean, you got a date at Bristol. Do you have to go to NASCAR and say, hey, we want to run dirt? Certainly you have to talk about that because of the RTA, and they have to be in agreement to want to run dirt.
Right.
Everybody has to be at the table, right?
Yeah, right.
But how much influence, I mean, how much of the decision is yours? How much of the decision is NASCAR's, and then how much influence does the RTA have on that type of choice?
Well, we're in it together. I think that's the thing that has been really great about the last year. As we've gone through the COVID year, the sport is in a better place than ever, I think, with just working together, being open to new ideas or different things and changes, and it's just been fantastic. So I don't feel like when I call NASCAR or meet with them, it's not a us versus them thing. It's a we thing, and that's what's making NASCAR as a sport a really, really you know, powerful group, and that's what's making our sport just climb higher and higher.
How are you doing? You know, it's funny. You're our returning champion when it comes to the show. I don't know that we've had anybody on this show more than we've had you. Do you know that?
No kidding.
Like, this has to be the fourth time.
Me and Mike were talking about that.
So you're our returning champion.
I don't think
there's a close second. Okay. The reason I bring that up is because we had you on our show, albeit it was a Zoom show, when the COVID situation, it was about a year ago, wasn't it? It was about a year ago. We were trying to, you know, figure out all this. Give us an update. Where are you guys as the track owners and the people that run the sport today in navigating? We're still in this, situation a year later. Certainly it's changed. Now we've got fans at the track, but you're still making these big decisions. I mean, you're making decisions to do this. All right. So just give us a kind of a status update on how you guys are doing with the pandemic and all that.
You know, it's there's so many changes, and we have been just sort of rolling with the punches. You know, you've got different rules and regs in different states and counties and cities, and that's been a big thing to deal with for the whole sport. I mean, from the beginning of the COVID, shutdown, we talked about, I think, last time, we had to figure out how to get the shops back open in Mecklenburg, Cabarrus County, and Iredale, and that was a big challenge. So we couldn't race if the teams can't go back to work. Mm-hmm. So we worked on that. Then being able to get back to the track, working with all of our healthcare partners and all the different groups to be able to get back racing was our primary goal. And I think, because we worked together, NASCAR was able to get back on track sooner than anybody, and that was a big thing. So as we go forward, we've had to make changes, different tweaks to our standard event policies, and a lot of people aren't quite ready to get back to a major event yet, and that's understandable.
Like fans or like government?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Fans. Sponsors, government entities, some are in, some are not in yet.
That's fair.
And there's been just kind of a slow migration back to normal. And we're not back there yet, but we're getting closer. And that's helping us. We had 36,000 tickets sold for Bristol. And, that's the biggest crowd, really since a year ago.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you foresee that progressing and growing that?
I do. You know, with different regulations, the 3 feet versus 6 feet, different states allowing for different capacity levels, it'll continue to grow. And as more people get vaccinated, and it's not just about policies, it's also about how people feel and that they feel safe. And we're doing a lot to make sure that people feel safe. We're doing a lot of cleaning. We're doing a lot of just things to help people feel good about coming to an event.
I guess this next big idea has to be the fairgrounds, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so we want to talk about Nashville Fairgrounds. Me and you went together. You were nice enough to take me along the latest trip up there to see the mayor. The mayor signed a letter of intent, and we had a great conversation with him. We got to visit the racetrack itself, and we just spent a great day just discussing one of my favorite places. So it was a really good time. You seem really happy with the results of that trip.
Yeah.
And but we haven't spoke a lot about it since then personally. What I understood when we left Nashville was the mayor basically saying, all right, now go back and put together a plan that you can show me and that
right.
I can get everyone here in Nashville to get on board with. So
right.
I'm just curious as to where you guys are and what progress has been made.
Sure. So since we met, and thanks again for going up there with me, that was great. And we met with the governor and the mayor, and Dale took some pictures with a bunch of people, and it was a lot of fun. But the mayor, was kind enough to give us a letter of intent. And since then, we've had multiple meetings with people on the project, fine tuning different plans that go along with the whole project. And then simultaneously working on a final agreement that would have us manage the construction and renovations and then operate the facility. So it's in progress, and it's a good thing. We're moving closer.
Yeah.
Why did you take Dale?
Well, because
I wouldn't stop begging.
It was great. So he and I talked about Nashville many times, as you know. And so when he tweeted,
I think you're right. I can tell.
What when he tweeted that he was involved in the IndyCar thing, I texted him. I said, I can't believe you're promoting without me. And then we talked, and he said, I told you I want to help. I'll come up anytime. And he said, you let me know, and whenever you want to go to Nashville, I'll drop whatever I'm doing and I'll go. And I said, okay. And like the next week I called you and said, next week, Thursday, lunch with the mayor. And Dale said, I'm in. And within 5 minutes.
Was that meeting on the books already when Dale had said that, or did you arrange that meeting after Dale said that?
As soon as we hung up, and he said, I'll go, that's when I started working on the meeting, and you know, the mayor was able to clear his schedule pretty quick, and so that worked out great, and Dale responded really quick. And on the airplane there, he said, when I hung up, I told Amy, Marcus is going to call me, and I'm going to have to drop what I'm doing and go. And so I really appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I don't think you understand the history that y'all made by that right there. I mean, Dale Jr. is not going to tell Amy that, I don't care. I'm going. That's an impressive feat. Now, what was his role? I know what he says his role was.
He was the closer.
Come on. Let's stop. Well, I mean, it's okay if his role was to smile and be Dale Jr., but what was his role? I mean, I'm sure you talked about it on the plane, right?
I don't know. We just, I mean.
I was feel good.
That's what I'm saying. If you were
he
just.
He was great. He was great.
I was there to keep things nice and warm.
It's a perfect, you know what? You did. And it was a perfect compliment to the whole situation. Governor and all the governor's staff was happy to see Dale. And they were like, who are you? Hi, Dale. How you doing?
Wow. So there you go. He brought a little bit of if nothing else, an icebreaker and people to feel comfortable.
No, honestly, just Dale's feedback and insight in the meeting, kind of lending the credibility that, you know, this is important for NASCAR, I think really helped a lot. So it was great.
He said you guys were high-fiving each other, is that right? Like, he told me that y'all were really excited. Now, I don't know if that kind of emotion is what you want out there in the public, but for real.
That's great. I'm super excited about it.
You were that excited about it after
been working on it for 3 years. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited about it. I'm optimistic. I just think it is a great fit for NASCAR. The Fairground Speedway is in Nashville, and that's just really unusual. I mean, to take a NASCAR event into a venue that's 2 miles from City Hall, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talking to you about, we talked about this on the way there. There's a lot of community concerns and people that live near the track and all that. When they hear about what we did and the meeting we had with the mayor, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the community thinks more racing,
right?
More,
right?
More noise, more,
great point,
right?
Yeah.
And so when I had and we, me and you discussed those concerns before we ever got to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that it's top of mind for you. I know that it's one of the priorities in the whole process of fixing the track up is to make sure the community's happy with everything.
Right.
But we talked about that. One of the things that I understood by the end of the day was that short track racing, as we know it at Nashville, wouldn't go anywhere. All the things that are happening there that people enjoy about Nashville as far as a short track, late model, super late model sort of venue would all remain. But you guys would clean the schedule up as far as the week-to-week practice, open practice. Like right now, anyone can call the track and go drive laps and be there all day from 8 to 5 just humming around that racetrack, right?
Right, right.
You guys would have a little bit more uniformity. So there would actually be, even with a NASCAR component, less days. There would be a much cleaner schedule that even the community would be aware of and understand.
Right.
Is that not true?
Yeah, so the Fairground Speedway is right next to this new Major League Soccer stadium that's under construction currently. It's a really unique and special part of town, and it's in the community. So the venue, this is a big deal. The venue is already, it already belongs to the people, and it's been the Nashville Fairgrounds for a long, long time, for decades. And so our vision is to restore it to the kind of venue that the community can enjoy, everything from a NASCAR weekend to a music festival, Christmas shows in the holidays, the state fair, of course, and all sorts of events. So, you know, Nashville is an event town, and that facility needs to be brought up to, you know, the standards that it needs to be today to host a lot of events. And it's not just racing. We do this at our Speedway in Las Vegas, where, you know, twice a year now we host NASCAR events, but 50 other weeks out of the year we're hosting everything from a construction expo to a music concert, car shows, you know, driverless car exhibitions, all sorts of special events there. And we think that the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway can be this events venue that complements everything that goes on in Nashville.
But a lot of the modernization of the racetrack, if you were to get the contract, a lot of that would go toward sound mitigation and doing things to improve the experience for the community on the race
weekend. Sound and a lot of the things you don't see, like plumbing and electrical and just a lot of good safety things as well. So, yeah.
One of the other things I learned about going on this trip that was interesting to me is you've been working on it for 3 years. During those 3 years, the only thing that I had in my mind was soccer stadium, racetrack. But when I saw the property, there's way, way more involved. It's a much more complex property than just the racetrack and just a soccer stadium. There's a community park component. Right now, there's currently even a dog park on the property.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there'll be shopping and small you know, retail and things like that.
Some housing is going to be there, high-rise housing. Yeah,
I was really impressed because I'd had it in my mind that it, and I think a lot of people may as well, that have heard this, listened in on this conversation for the last several years, that it was soccer stadium, racetrack, and nothing, you know, no one knew how much more complex this entire property is.
Yeah, well, it just, Nashville's growing so much and so fast. As the city grows that way, we have a lot of neighbors, and we want the whole facility to be a place that all the neighbors can enjoy. And, you know, NASCAR is part of it, but it's certainly not, you know, just a NASCAR facility. It's an events facility that will serve the whole community of Nashville.
One of the interesting things about the relationship would be that you wouldn't own the facility. You would basically just be the promoter. And that brings me to, is that similar to basically how you're operating at Circuit of Americas?
It's close. Circuit of the Americas, we have a lease on the facility for a certain time, and it's a short window to host the NASCAR race. Compared to the Nashville Fairgrounds, we'll be operating a facility for the fair board and the city, for 10 years.
For a longer
plus.
Period of time.
Yeah.
But it's a similar thing where you don't actually own the dirt, but you're,
correct.
You know, it's a major business opportunity for you as a.
When my dad first ran his first race, back then, the way that promoters ran races is you would lease the track, and you would get a date, and you would lease the track, and then you would promote that date at that location. So what we're doing in Circuit of the Americas is kind of like it used to be done back in the 50s.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
Okay, let me ask you something about Nashville. All right, so you just answered a couple of my questions, and one was, is the state fair still there? And if it is, I would assume you're having to deal with state or fair boards, and you just said you are. Fair board owns that property, right?
Right.
That's a whole different set of, I won't call it complications, just say circumstances dealing with fair boards, right? I mean, there's so many fairground speedways over America since the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And there are not a lot of them out there anymore.
That's true.
Why is that? What happened? And is it because of the whole situation with fair boards? And how are you going to navigate that?
Well, I think we're bringing events to that venue that will help pay the bills to renovate it. You know, so absent, you know, our big events like NASCAR weekend, you really don't have the revenues to afford to upgrade it. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be, you know, providing a lot of revenue to the fairgrounds that will help finance all those upgrades. And so it, maybe this is something that will happen elsewhere. But I think to answer your question, why is that? There haven't been a lot of these things where you really create revenue at fairgrounds that's significant enough. Today, it's just a lot of money to keep up these facilities. It's real expensive.
You've answered the question. You're helping pay for the upgrades, or you're paying for the upgrades, which is in their best interest, and you're making a bet that this is a bet you're going to make. You're going to help create this outdoor events venue, not just the racetrack, but the outdoor events venue, with the anticipation you're going to get a return on that, right? Is that fair?
We think it's going to be good for us and good for the people in Nashville because we're bringing revenues that haven't been there in a long, long time. And I think that will be good for all of us.
One more last thing on Nashville. There's a deadline.
Yes.
What's the deadline? July 21st?
Yeah, sometime this summer.
Okay. What does that mean? What is the deadline?
It just means we got to get a contract, an actual contract done, an LOI is a letter of intent to do a contract. So we're in the process of finalizing the contract, and we'll finalize that, and we'll keep moving forward.
Is that just getting the contract finalized, that's beating the deadline?
Yes. Yeah, okay. We're in the process right now. I think I feel good about it and feel like we're all on the same page.
Coda, Atlanta, who keeps your schedule?
I don't know.
No, really.
Do I have good help? Good help.
You got to have good help, but that's a token answer. I mean, really, I don't know how you keep all these irons in the fires.
I just have such confidence in my team, and I've got great people around me that I know that if I have an idea, I'll talk with them about it. If they say we can do it, I have full confidence in that. And I think it's I was thinking about that yesterday, just about how it's the monumental effort of the dirt in Bristol, and that why people think that it's maybe crazy of me to do that, but it's not just me. I just have this confidence in my team to be able to make it happen.
O'Reilly Auto Parts, man, they are in the business of keeping your car on the road. They offer friendly and helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. You know the jingle?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do the jingle at the end of this.
Nice. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So listen. Listen to the end. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your car. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fixed or a quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you'll find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they're friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today, or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com. That's O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly's Auto Parts.
Ow!
You better put that in there. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, or give you a chance to explain, was when people heard Bristol Motor Speedway was going to Nashville to try to acquire an opportunity to race at that fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just assumed, oh no, Bristol's going to lose. Bristol will have to give up something to get something. Right,
right, right.
And I think that's a misconception. You're basically, and I'll let you get into this, but it's my understanding that you're just tasking Bristol Motor Speedway as an entity to be responsible for this project.
Right, right. Yeah, Jerry and his crew have done a really good job of just staying on it. They're closest to Nashville. I get over there quite often with Jerry, but he is over there, a lot more than I am, and so that's how we're handling
it. But Bristol wouldn't give up a date. If Nashville, if everything goes great with the fair board, You got a renovated racetrack. How are you going to find a date for Nashville?
Well, we've got some ideas. I don't have that ready to talk about yet, sure. But we've definitely got some ideas on how we can bring a date there.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you tried. We were going to crack the shell, see if we could get it open, but he didn't get it open.
One more hard shell I think we're going to have today is Atlanta Motor Speedway. So, you know, I got this little picture that came off of the internet of Atlanta Motor Speedway and a giant casino and all kinds of other stuff.
Look at that.
Water park.
It's cool.
Is that what we're building, Marcus, right there? Is that what we got going on?
Absolutely.
Okay. Five roller coasters and this and another.
Yeah.
Big concert venue. You know, I got excited when I first saw this. I think it was about a year and a half ago because the racetrack's an oval. There's no tri-oval. But
you noticed.
I quickly learned that that was just a very loose rendering of a possible future expansion for Atlanta Motor Speedway.
He did ask about that.
I did. Oh,
I guarantee you he asked about that.
Marcus will not hire me because he knows that I just go bonkers.
No, man. I'm going to have to hire you to help promote races.
I'd be digging up all of his racetracks.
golly.
I'd be like, watch this. Sir.
You sure you don't need somebody to just dig up all the work y'all done all over the years?
I'm sure there are a lot of people.
Marcus, don't come to Texas for a couple of months. I got it. Let me have it. Right. So anyhow, I mean, what can you tell us about Atlanta? There's been conversations and rumblings and rumors. And I know that even the Atlanta Road Speedway racetrack handle has commented on this. So it kind of, you know, kind of ties you guys to – you know, to being able to come on here and talk about it a little sure. bit. But
oh yeah, speaking of that, you said you were going to send me notes about today, right?
And I didn't.
Well, I mean, he went to Twitter.
Yeah,
I know.
He even put it out publicly. He didn't ever send me that one.
I was going to get around to it.
Scott Cooper sent me a note. Said Dale said y'all are going to talk about these things tomorrow, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess he's going to. Maybe this is his note.
So what can you tell us about Atlanta? Like, when I see this rendering, I think Kansas Speedway and a lot of the, you know, there's been a few tracks that have just basically developed a town right there on that property where there was nothing.
Right.
And Atlanta is sort of out in the middle of nowhere. It has been for years. That hasn't been a problem. But I think for this track to survive going forward, for the track to be as great as you guys want it to be, you're looking at components to add to the facility.
Yep.
So tell us about it.
So Atlanta is coming south to the Speedway, you know, just the growth of
the city.
Oh, it's huge. And the state of Georgia is considering the possibility of gaming and allowing for a destination resort to happen in the state. It would take some work in the legislature. It would take a constitutional amendment. And those things are being discussed. And we think that if it's going to happen, that Atlanta Motor Speedway would be a great place for a destination resort like this. And Kansas Speedway has done a phenomenal job with it. Like you mentioned, they've got so many things around the Speedway, and they've really created a neat hub of hospitality and tourism there. We think we can do something really similar in Atlanta. And, that's the goal. I think we've got a lot of work to do until then. Ed Clark, he just retired, but he's been president of Atlanta Motor Speedway for 30 years. I've got him still working, and he's doing a great job on that to help us try to steer that ship and get us to be able to do something like that.
Atlanta Motor Speedway is one of my favorite racetracks on the schedule. It went from two dates traditionally for years, decades, to one date, back to two dates this year.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
So, a lot of it was just decision-making around COVID. We had, we shifted the All-Star race from Charlotte to Texas. We shifted a date to COTA, which was a new venue for us. And we had to figure out how to navigate the various laws and rules and regs. And at the time, Kentucky was a challenge for us with the restrictions. And so when we were making decisions about the schedule, we had to have, as sure of a schedule as we could. And at the time, Kentucky wasn't as sure as we needed it to be. So we knew Georgia would allow us to host events and to host with people. So we decided to put two dates there at Atlanta.
So you're the one that can influence
that happening. Like, you can't race here. I'm going to go race here, and everybody falls in line. Everybody being the industry, right?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it with NASCAR. It was a great, conversation, and thought about how does TV, factor in here. That's just the whole thing.
Yeah.
And just to have that assurance. But when NASCAR decided we're not going to go to California at the beginning of the season, we're going to stay 2 weeks in Daytona, that was, part of the thinking that we may not be able to go to California in the early part of the season. So I thought those were just kind of game time decisions that we had to make. We couldn't make it, a month out or 2 months out. We had to really plan the schedule, back last summer when we did.
The All-Star Race has been at Charlotte for a long time. There's been conversations about it'd be cool if it were here. It'd be cool if it were here, right?
Yep.
That's been going on for, a decade or so, but you guys have been steadfast. It stayed at Charlotte, but now it's moving. Like, how hard was that decision for you, and what was the conversation like? Was there any other alternatives discussed about where this All-Star Race would go or could go?
Sure.
And yeah. And how did you guys land on Texas?
We talked about a lot of opportunities, a lot of different ideas. COTA was kind of the catalyst to see that move happen. When we went to COTA and we got that lease deal done, we decided, how do we handle Texas Motor Speedway if we got a date at COTA? And it just worked out that the right move was to take All-Star to Texas. And it wasn't my first thought on it. We just had to really get out the whiteboard, so to speak, and think about ideas and start to move the puzzles around, and that's what we landed on. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think our camping is sold out, if not almost sold out in COTA, and people are excited about All-Star in Texas, and not making everybody happy, but that's, again, not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago when COTA first kind of came onto the map, Eddie Gossage being pretty hardcore about there's one cup race in Texas, and here at Texas Motor Speedway.
Yep.
So how does that transition happen to where, because Eddie's very, territorial or very protective of what he's got there at Texas Motor Speedway. You guys own the racetrack. How does all that transition from never to what we have today? Are you guys?
Well, so Marshall Carlson with Hendrick called me up one day. We're friends, and we go back to high school football together. Got great friendship together. And he called me one day and said, "Hey, would you be interested in going to COTA? And, what do you think about this idea?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be cool. Let's go check it out." So Marshall gets the credit for making that intro happen.
Interesting.
And we went down, visited with Bobby Epstein and Rad Weaver, and talked about the idea. It took a while to get it together. I felt like you think about the way that road course racing has gone from why are we on road courses to I like road courses. and Austin, the market that it is, the facility is a first-class facility.
Amazing.
All those things kind of combined that felt like I think this is a good idea.
When I'm going all over the place here, but when they're in Fontana, they're talking about taking this racetrack and reconfiguring it, right?
Yeah.
You don't own the racetrack, but how do you have any influence or involvement or assistance? You talk about how it's everybody's in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I guess, what are your thoughts about making you've made major changes to your own racetracks in the past. This will be this will be a pretty big undertaking.
Oh yeah.
What influence or support or help do you put forth towards something like that?
Any support that we can give. I've said, to Steve Phelps, Jim, Lisa, if we can help, just let us know. They know that I'm a phone call away on anything like that. Somebody may have already called Steve Swift to talk about it. I don't know. I think it's a really cool idea, and to have a short track on the West Coast is pretty cool.
Something we've needed for years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, when my dad bought Sonoma back in, what, 96, 97, his plan was to build a West Coast Bristol, not too far away from it. But he felt like this road course is so beautiful. It's a great location. Let's just leave it here.
Brings up another question.
I know.
There was a great conversation on social media throughout the weekend about how beautiful Sonoma is, particularly this time of year.
Yeah.
When everything's green.
Right.
You got all this rain happening in Bristol. Are you at all, even just a tiny bit, influenced by those type of conversations going on out in the world about, man, this would be great to race in Sonoma this time of year and Bristol in that time of year and this, that, and other?
Well, this time of year in Sonoma is called the rainy season.
Oh, it's just as bad out there.
So we, you know.
Because it rains once or twice a month?
It rains quite a bit.
It rains a lot?
That's why
really?
It's so green.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It
man.
Rains quite a bit.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
How often are we in California?
Well, I know, but you just don't assume that it rains too often. Then.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it does in Seattle. I mean, so like the West Coast.
Well,
maybe
it
it's
does
a West
there.
Coast.
I think it's just kind of the weather pattern in that area, and I think that's part of what makes it good for growing grapes.
I would love to go out to Sonoma and race with all that green.
Well, I would too, and it's not something that I'm opposed to. Maybe one day we will.
It's stark and almost, you know, it's interesting seeing comparisons of what
so
the track
looks like. Yeah, so dry when we go out in the summer. Yeah.
No
and
grass.
It's lush and gorgeous right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, since you can run a road course with rain tires, maybe we will one day. I don't know.
That was part of the conversation. It's like if it does rain, they can just run in the rain.
Yeah.
You brought up your dad. You've rolled out quite ambitious ideas, dirt racing. You know, has he had an opinion on any of these? Do you ever ask him what he thinks? Does he ever speak up and say, "Hey, what are you thinking? This isn't going to work"?
Well, yes,
he does.
Yes, he. I mean, I want to make my dad proud. You know, he's got an amazing reputation, and look at his amazing career and the Hall of Fame and everything. I tell you, he, for the kind of person he is, when he put me in charge, he really kind of just said, "Go," you know, and it was, that's been really, really neat to see his confidence in me over the years. And so I can tell you that he wasn't really crazy about the Roval until it was successful.
Until it was successful.
Yeah.
That sounds like everybody.
And I heard what the King said about dirt on
racing,
Bristol.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, the funny thing about that conversation, not to interrupt your thought, Marcus, but Richard Petty said didn't think it was a great idea. And that conversation and that quote came from last year.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, it was an
old
quote.
I'm glad you told me that. I didn't know
that. It was not like he popped up on the scene this weekend and said, "What are we doing here? This is terrible."
That's a good point. I didn't realize that.
It was. So looking at the date on the article, I believe it was from October of 2020 when this was all being discussed. Hey, what about a dirt race at Bristol?
Gotcha.
And he, like a lot of people at the time, were very skeptical.
Yeah.
And but I was curious if you were to ask him if he'd give you – I doubt he'd give you the same answer.
I bet you're right. I bet you're right.
Thursday or Wednesday.
He was – I know he was up in Bristol this weekend, and, you know, I think he had fun.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Yeah. But my dad kind of had a similar opinion, you know, that
– About the dirt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we moved on from dirt, and dirt's a lot of work. And I would not recommend it, you know, every weekend. I wouldn't recommend it for more than one weekend, to be honest with you. It's a big challenge.
Expand on that. You wouldn't recommend dirt to happen more than once in the Cup schedule?
I mean, that's my thought. And not just because it's ours, but because we started on this in January. You know, and it took all of January, February, and March to get it done. And then we'll be working on cleaning it up for the next 6 weeks. So it's not a small undertaking. And also the unpredictability of dirt, it's just really finicky. And, you know, that's why tracks are paved. Right, pavement is kind of a
predictable one.
It's an advancement over dirt, and I think that's like all parts of racing, you advance. But it's really fun to take a step back in history and to just, you know, go at it again.
I like the idea of there being a dirt race on the schedule and it matter, it be for points, not an exhibition. I'm, for now, agree with you that it should be this one select event. Knowing NASCAR, they'll, if it's a good thing, they're going to give us a lot of it. Why? One of the questions that I saw from some of the fans when I told them that you were going to be on the show that I liked and wanted to ask you, and you just kind of gave me an opportunity, is why not, instead of do the work that it takes to get Bristol ready and then clean Bristol up for the next event to be concrete, why not go either build a purpose-built racetrack for that Cup Series, or take an old track and, you know, renovate it to be that one dirt race track, you know? Mm-hmm. Would it not make more financial sense, I suppose, if we're going to have our dirt race, to have a dedicated facility that has all the bells and whistles that we need as a Cup Series, that you wouldn't have to dig up and replant every year?
So, in short, it would actually not work financially. To build a facility, when you're talking about over $100 million to build a facility that is, it's not as good as Bristol. And if you went to an existing dirt track that's, a half mile, that's a possibility. But, for us, our track is Bristol. And if we're going to have a dirt track and run Cup on dirt, it's going to be Bristol. Hands down.
Yeah. I got you. What can you tell us about the financial responsibility to transfer in Bristol? I mean, how is it challenging financially to do that? Because it seems like to me that it's impossible. I don't know how y'all do it. I physically know because y'all have explained it, and it's hard work. Yeah. But financially, it must be a massive risk.
It is. I mean, it's millions of dollars to be able to convert the track and run it. But to me, doing the same thing that we've always done is also a risk. So, to do something different is, it's a risk. It's a big investment. It might work. It might not work. We kind of knew that going into it. But, if you don't risk it, you just never know.
What determines if it works? What is it? The return on?
Part of it's the financial success. Part of it is the event success. Was it fun? Did people enjoy it? Did enough people enjoy it? Maybe. And I think we had great financial success because we sold out all of our tickets. We had great sponsorship success. Our sponsors were happy. The television partners were happy. We had a few teams that were happy, and we had a lot of fans that were happy with it. So all those things, kind of add up to a successful event.
But you would have had fans if it was not dirt. I mean, you would have had fans, right? So where do you make the money back if the fan? You certainly weren't able to fill up your track with fans because of everything, the restrictions. But like, what had to happen for it to be a success?
I think by putting dirt on Bristol, we created a buzz that would not have been there had we not. It would have just been another Bristol race.
Mm-hmm.
And that publicity and notoriety is beneficial to the whole sport. And so, NASCAR was one of the most talked about subjects over the last week in the whole country.
It was on the Today Show this morning.
Yeah. And that's a big plus for the whole sport, not just us. And if it's good for the whole sport, it's good for us.
Mm. All right. I bet you that we'll be sitting at this table 5 years from now, and you will have two dirt races at Bristol. The concrete will be dug up, and it'll be a full-time facility. Ooh. Running dirt races.
This is your next attempt to get that concrete dug up?
I just will be surprised. No, I'll just be surprised if you keep switching it back and forth. And I don't think you'll quit on the dirt.
All right.
I think you're gonna get near back.
Keep that tape.
I believe that you're gonna get back to becoming one of the most difficult tickets to get. I think that you're gonna enjoy having that month of racing where you have all of the different series coming through there. It's going to be a great way to tie the two disciplines together, because there's a bit of a, you know, the dirt and the pavement crowd are not always kind of on the same page.
No, no. Right?
It's, and I think it's a great way to bring them together.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
It is. It really is. And so look at all the cup guys that ran in the world, the
late models,
and all that could, all that's cool. Great, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think you guys will, like you say, if you can find a way to be the one dirt race, I think you'll go ahead and go all in and just convert the track completely.
That's a fun game.
It's a bold statement. Where
what will Marcus be doing in 5 years? I mean, I think you got to go more than that. Like he guy's gonna be racing on the moon by then. I mean, it's honestly, there's too many. He's got irons in the fire, and this is why you're on the show so much. I mean, it really is. It's why we have to get him back. But in 5 years, my goodness. All right, so
5 years we need a roof on Bristol.
All right, that was another thing. I was watching the race.
There you go.
Looking at some aerial shots. You talked about the roof with me on the trip to Nashville.
What?
And I said, why? You know, why would you? Well, he's like, rain. And you know, I'm thinking, like, well, the noise, the fumes, this and that and other. And he's like, we got it.
Yeah.
No problem. We got it covered.
So this,
think about, look at, like, the pictures I saw aerial-wise of the race this weekend and the dirt cloud. If you do a roof, can you still do dirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, so the sun baking the dirt
is what creates the dust.
Yeah, that takes the moisture out.
You think it'll hold moisture better and be a better dirt track?
Absolutely.
So how do you put a roof over something like that?
Well, here's where I would start is we hung the biggest center hung television over the top of Bristol. I mean, that thing is massive. To hang that, they call it the Colossus TV. Yes. It is huge. The cables are as big as my leg. I mean, they are huge. And the engineering feat was fantastic. And that, when I saw it all done for the football game a while back, and I thought, man, if we can hang this TV, I bet we could put a roof on this place. And so a roof has been talked about before, but now that we've done the TV, it just kind of gives me confidence that maybe we could do a cover.
A cover. See, that's a better word for it.
A cover.
When I think roof, people think
we need an
joists
umbrella.
And all kinds
shingles.
Of
shingles.
Yeah.
We need an umbrella. We just need to prevent the rain from ruining the day.
And the technology's there.
I think so. Yeah, those big cables and the tensile material that they use. They've covered big structures before.
Yeah, they have, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like that Montreal, that old stadium they had, it was kind of a...
Look at his wheels turning.
Oh, yeah.
This is blowing my mind. Have you gone around and talked about roofing Bristol anywhere else? Because this is news. I mean, this is like, hey.
That was one thing we had a conversation about I didn't tell you.
There you go. We broke the news.
Yep.
What else y'all talk about on these airplanes? That's probably a takeoff. What did y'all do when you get in the air? I mean, you guys, this is the next big show is flying with Marcus.
Yeah, podcasting on a plane.
Yeah, flying with Marcus. Oh, that's the next show.
NASCAR history and heritage come alive at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Celebrate my fellow inductees Donnie Allison, Jimmy Johnson, and Chad Knaus with their class of 2024 artifacts enshrined in the Hall of Honor. Don't miss the Ford Performance Showcase. It's a new Inside NASCAR exhibit that showcases the Ford Mustang's next-gen car through its design and innovation. The latest edition of Glory Road explores over 75 years of racing history with its cool 33-degree banking and 19 cars on display. On Mondays and Fridays, there's guided tours that take you behind the scenes with incredible stories and access to a NASCAR Hall of Fame insider. Or you can explore the hall at your own pace with the new mobile hub. It's a digital experience. Get behind the wheel of a realistic iRacing simulator. Or you can learn how fast-paced pit stops work with the Pit Crew Challenge. From the legends who shaped the sport to the new heroes earning a spot in the record books, the NASCAR Hall of Fame delivers an unforgettable experience. Book your visit to the hall today at NASCARHall.com.
I got two things. One, on the last podcast, you were talking about Noah being reckless and careless.
Yes.
I thought he was just very precise. I mean, he backed up. He didn't hit anybody.
Yeah.
Got in his box. And, you know, it created a little dust up. But that was good driving.
You liked it.
I thought
okay.
it was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I talking about that, and it's interesting to hear that from you. So when I saw it, I went, I cringed, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I know what's coming. You know, everybody's going to go, well, he did it on purpose.
Right.
He's an or whatever. Excuse my French. And I cringed and thought, man, I wish he didn't do that. I wish he wasn't as more careful, whatever. Right. I've been interested to hear the people that have said just what you said, like Brad Keselowski on Fox Race Hub, a couple other people that went your way that I didn't think would go that way.
Well, I my mind got changed when Noah posted the video from his camera.
That's what I heard as well from NASCAR on their decision not to find him was they were influenced a lot by that.
I showed it to Mike. I saw him. I don't know, the next day. And I said, did you see this video that Noah posted? And showed him. He's like, oh, I guess it's not what I thought it was. So
yeah.
I don't know if that weighed into it. But I just thought there he was. And I love Daniel Hemric. I mean, he's a great guy. And but he did get in the Noah's box halfway. So
the other thing, too, no, not to put this not to blame Daniel for what happened, what Noah did. But when Daniel backed up, he didn't back up all the way.
Well, that's true.
When he backed up, he got into his stall good enough for his crew to pit the car, but he was still a little bit forward in his stall. They're very tiny stalls to begin with.
Yeah. Things are just intense, and I thought.
So maybe when y'all go do some bigger stalls.
Bigger pit stalls.
Yeah, bigger pit stalls. You got some. gonna be, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what we forgot to ask him?
You said two things. You got another thing? You good?
What was your other thing?
North Wilkesboro.
Oh, what?
I just want to let you know that we haven't forgotten about North Wilkesboro. We haven't given up on it.
What?
What does that even mean? What?
Yeah,
it just means that
the wheels are turning
I'm
all the
ways. I'm thinking we're working on it. No promises. But we have not forgotten about it.
Yeah.
That's the big message.
Man, I don't know that ain't the biggest thing that you said in this conversation at the table. And I know you don't want – there's no promises. There's no – guarantees or that anything will ever happen at that racetrack, and I think everyone can totally understand that, but the fact that you guys even have it in the back of your mind I think will make a lot of people happy.
Well, I know a lot of people just think that I don't care, and that's not true. I really do care, and if we can think of a way to do something there, we're going to.
Oh boy, that's amazing to hear.
So next week, what are you doing on Tuesday mornings? Because, I mean, like, now we got to just talk about Wilkesboro. I mean, God almighty.
I don't have anything else to talk about at Wilkesboro. I just that's what I wanted to say that.
It's been on your conscience.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, I don't want people to think, don't care. We do care, and I am thinking about and work on ideas regularly to figure out how we do something there.
Well, I will let's just say this for the record then, because we were all there last year when we were, you know, weed eating and landscaping around there for the iRacing deal.
Gosh, it was cold.
Yes, it was. Miserable. And a little rainy. Yeah.
It was miserable.
Being inside that track, that's when I was convinced. I'm like, oh, this thing, you're not going to come back and race here. It's really falling apart. The infrastructure would require so much money.
It's in bad shape.
Disrepair, but that's when I sort of checked that box and said, okay, this, you know, and anybody that said, hey, we need to be racing back there, not just on iRacing, I'm like, yeah, but listen, this place is gone. I mean, like, it's gone. I'm just surprised to hear that there's still a little kindling.
I just, you know.
Never
say
never.
Yeah, I mean, I think there might be hope to do something there, and it's, you never know.
I think that. That's great to hear. A lot of people are going to love to hear that. I think it goes back to this, like the pandemic has opened up a world of opportunity and possibilities, and we're doing the things in this sport that we never would have ever considered doing, you know, but we are now because of the pandemic.
Well, and to be sure, I'm not saying a NASCAR race there. I just think that there's something that could be done there.
I think that what that has taught us is to never close the book on a potential idea or something being possible. Never say never. And I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth here, but I always felt like as long as that place is sitting there, and unless it gets cleaned flat off the map and disappears, there's always going to be a possibility that it gets used for something. And until it's completely gone, that possibility is always there.
You know what I think it is? I think you let him drive that Nova one time.
Oh, man, that was so cool.
He's sitting there.
Oh, we didn't talk about that.
He said, driving that, he's like, I'm at Wilkesboro.
Oh, my gosh.
I can see myself driving to Wilkesboro.
Sitting in that seat so low, and, you know, I leaned over to the left, and, oh, my gosh, that was the coolest thing.
Oh, man.
That was so cool.
I'm glad you enjoyed
it. Didn't you love it?
I did. Yeah. I loved watching it go by. Just on, you know, because I'd watched it race there so many times as a kid. So seeing it again go down that straightaway and just, it looked like we were just standing back in time.
It was so cool.
It was as much fun to watch it go by as it was to drive it. It really was. Who can you call up and go, hey, man, I need to take my car to your track, you know, and run run a couple laps.
I'm so glad you brought Charlotte.
I'm like, I really just don't need to go 60. I just need to go 60 miles an hour as fast as I need to go. And, boy, you get out there and you're like, I'm going to go a little faster than that, I think.
Yeah, dude, you should let him do it again. Take it back over there. He'll be like, you know what's a good idea? Let's get the Daytona Beach course back in the circuit. Let's get. Oh, I mean, who knows? Dude's got ideas. Put him in the car, man.
That car is so special.
A smooth car.
You did a heck of a job on that thing.
Runs good, don't it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
All the guys here at Junior Motorsports put their hands on it. They made it work. But, yeah, thanks for letting me take it over there. We got a great little hit on social media. Yeah. I was watching y'all's accounts and everything. Oh, it was fun to see everybody talking about it, getting excited about it, all the
reaction to it. Social media folks, they said, hey, any chance we can come down and take pictures of that? And, Dale said, yeah, I don't mind. And I thought y'all would have sent some people. I said, he's probably got people coming over to take pictures of it and whatnot. But our folks were so happy to do that.
I showed up with LW and Josh Berry, and I didn't even add it together. We're standing on pit road, and LW goes, man, LW said some wisecrack because Josh blew up the front end of his car going in the grass at Atlanta. And I went, that's right. Yes, you on the track. And I said, and I looked at their social media team. I said, what? Why don't y'all go over to the turf and get them two sitting down kneeling by the turf?
Yes.
It'd be a funny picture.
It was. So LW said, hey, Marcus, by the way, this is Josh Berry. And I was like, oh, man. I feel terrible.
Why? You're not supposed to drive race cars through the grass.
I said, that hurt, didn't it? He was like,
it was funny.
Maybe a little bit. But
so they kneel down talking about turf and talking to each other. Yeah. And it's a great little moment.
Oh, man.
So not only does he help book meetings and guests, but he also does social media content
creator.
He's, if you ever need anybody.
And, brokered that relationship, the meeting for me and Josh. Golly.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
If he knows, like in hindsight, he should have just gone on pit road.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah.
Of course.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
We were standing out there loading the car up, and Josh goes, and LW walks up and goes, "Can Josh go? He really wants to go." And I was like,
"Oh, nice.
Of course he can go." So it wasn't like I brought Josh to go, "Hey, check it out, Josh. Marcus Guess is here."
Yeah.
Ha-ha. Ha-ha. I'm glad it worked out
everybody's
that way.
Everybody's awkward.
Everybody's awkward.
Appreciate you coming on, bud.
Sure thing.
It's always fun to talk to you. Just so curious about everything you got going on and how you do it. You know, it's just a really impressive thing to watch. All the praise that everybody heaped on you guys during the weekend and post-race, well-deserved.
Thank you.
Way to stay the course. I mean, I know that's you as a person, but you got to have a great team, and you praise your team. They deserve it. And somehow you put the right people in the right place to pull it off. And look forward. We're thrilled that you're going to do it again next year. I want to be there. I can't wait. It's love what you're doing. Mike said it. You know,
thank you.
You're swinging for the fence and hitting a lot of home runs, driving in a lot of runs.
It's fun. I appreciate your support.
Yeah,
thank
buddy.
You. Yeah.
All right. Hey, and again, you had one of the most stressful weekends that I think maybe you've had in a long, long time. You had a race on Monday instead of Sunday, and you still came in here today. So I appreciate that commitment.
I was happy to do it, and I appreciate you dropping everything when we went to Nashville. This was easy.
Anytime.
Just a little drive up the road. So,
all right.
Good stuff.
Marcus Smith on the Dale Jr. Download.
The Dale Jr. Download is brought to you by ZipRecruiter.
You going to any concerts this summer, man?
I am. I'm seeing a concert in June. Hardy, and Kit Moore.
Love Hardy.
In Charlotte. I was so stressed getting the tickets. I'm going to be front row. I'm in the pit. When these tickets go out, man, I am online as soon as tickets open. I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, you know, you got to act quick.
Yes.
And when you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for a business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. Mm. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Dale Jr. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, it's finally time for my favorite part of the show. It's Ask Junior, brought to you by Xfinity. They've been a great partner for us, obviously supporting NASCAR and the Xfinity Series. They're a premier partner for NASCAR, so we appreciate everything Xfinity does for our sport. I'm a customer, actually, as well, so I have Xfinity Internet at a location and use it, and I'm happy with it. So you guys have been putting in your questions all week long at Xfinity Racing on Twitter. I read along. I see it. I see it popping up in my timeline. It gets me excited.
There you go.
So let's get to those questions. We did not do an open segment for the show today. That gives us a little more time, I hope, to do a little longer Ask Junior. So let's get those questions coming. Leah?
The questions are rolling in. Everybody just wants to know what you thought of the dirt race.
I loved it. You know, I'm sure some things to be learned and some adjustments to be made to make the experience better. But I think it was a win. It was a plus. It was a success, something I want to see again. I wanted to be there in person. The weather wasn't allowing us to get and travel into Bristol on Sunday morning. So we didn't go. Monday I was busy. Couldn't leave the house. So I didn't get to see it in person. I really want to see what that's like and what the energy's like at the racetrack itself. I'm sure there's going to be so many people with the same opinion and buying tickets for that race next year. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. I hope that it's here to stay, and I hope that it's just at Bristol. I think that there's potential for us to have success at dirt tracks outside of Bristol, but let's just do it at Bristol for a little while and figure it out, get it right, get our cars right. We got a new car coming into the sport in a year or two. Let's get all the bugs worked out of this before we go taking it everywhere. When something good happens in NASCAR, everybody tries to want to recreate it. We're seeing that with the we saw that with the mile and a half track boom. We're seeing it a little bit with the road course track boom into this, you know, those tracks coming into the schedule, multiplying. And so let's just keep it at Bristol, go a couple years and see how things work, and see what develops from there. And then we'll I think I'm going to be definitely tuning into the truck race at Knoxville. I'm super excited and hopeful that that is a great success. That's a, you know, just like Eldora, that's a purpose-built dirt track facility, and it'd be interesting to see if we can go to those places and continue to have success there like we've had at Eldora. So that's exciting as well, and certainly factors into what dirt racing looks like for NASCAR and the Cup Series long-term.
Patty Steffen wants to know if you were surprised by Martin Truex Jr. winning the truck race.
You know, I'm not. And I love to see Martin do well because he's one of the drivers that I got to work with early on in his career. And when Rick was in between drivers, I tried my hardest to get him to hire Martin. He didn't. There were a couple other people in the works there, and Martin kind of got lost in the shuffle, and he hadn't, you know, won as many races at that particular point in his career. But he goes on to, you know, surpass my win total and going further beyond winning more races in the future. I'm sure he's a champion. So I text Rick as soon as he was won that first stage. I text Rick Hendrick. I said, "Hey, you watching this truck race? Truex just dusted him, man. Don't you wish you kind of would have hired him when I told you to?" So I like to rub that in a little bit. So I like to see him do good. He's a great guy, hunting buddy. And I think he surprised himself. We were texting, me and Martin were texting after the truck race, and he was laughing because he was surprised as everybody else, I think.
One more dirt racing question before we move on. Sure. Richard Payne, he says he understands the move to the single file restarts, but would you have liked to see NASCAR go back to the double file restart in overtime?
That would have probably been my preference, but I think once you make the decision, it's hard to go back. If you make a choice to make that change mid-race, that's a commitment. That's a big change. That's a big deal. Everybody was on social media either saying what a great decision or clowning it. I think you can't go back. You know, you just open yourself up to more criticism and less legitimate of an event by continuing to kind of pull these strings as the race goes on. They made the choice, and I like the fact that they stuck with it. We still had a pretty interesting, you know, finish to the race. If we don't have a yellow at the end, it doesn't even have that yellow flag or overtime. So if we don't have the caution, but I didn't have a problem with it. I was surprised though that they did that. I was surprised that they went single file in the middle of the race. That was a big gamble.
Mm-hmm.
That could have went, you know, I guess, I don't know, that could have went wrong, but typically I wouldn't have guessed they would have made that decision. But it was funny because we race online in these online races and iRacing, and there's admins in these leagues, and they make changes like that in the middle of the race, and it just made me chuckle a little bit that the league admins were ticked off. Said, "Oh, boys can't stop wrecking. We're going single file." It was funny.
All right, Matthew T. wants to know, if you knew it wouldn't affect performance, what's a feature from a normal vehicle that you would like to add to a race car? No performance. It wouldn't affect performance at all.
What's a feature? Oh, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to be any help on this one.
Yeah. There's nothing. I don't think there's anything. You know, I hope, or you know, I miss the days where race cars had stock panels and the bodies looked identical to what you see driving up down the street. So that's kind of where my mind goes with the question is, you know, what can we do to make the cars look more recognizable to what we have riding up down the road to bring more brand identity to the sport and make the manufacturer involvement in the sport a lot more impactful both ways, like the manufacturers, you know, win on Sunday, sell on Monday kind of thing. And so that's where my head goes, I guess, more factory style parts and pieces on the exterior of the cars.
Everyone's saying air conditioning, but you guys have like the cooling hoses, right?
So they're not that great.
They're not?
I mean, they only give you enough power just to get a little bit cooler air. It's about 10 or 20 degrees maybe cooler than the interior of the cockpit. So it's still like 95 degree air, but when you are in 120 degrees and you feel 95 degree air, it's oddly cooler, right? It's not like, oh, that's hot. It's 95 degree air. It's kind of like, wow, that feels better than what else is in here, right? It's kind of weird.
Everyone also is saying radio, which I don't think that'll work because you need to hear spotter.
Dude, yes. But they got the technology to where the radio could be playing, and when the spotter keys up, it could cancel it out, because I had that when we would go test. So when we go to Daytona and test, I had a radio harness that I could plug into this was back when MP3 players were a thing. I could have my MP3 player playing, but if Tony Jr. keyed the mic, I'd hear him. It was nice.
All right. Next question coming from Brent Scott. What are your thoughts on the lack of qualifying? It seems to be hurting the growth of the sport.
I don't think it's hurting the growth of the sport. But I do miss it. So when we saw practice this weekend, it really woke me up to being like, I didn't know if I missed it, right? I couldn't tell. I was like, well, I don't know if I missed practice or qualifying. I kind of don't know, right? And then we saw some practice this weekend, and I was like, absolutely, this is fun. Obviously, I was curious to watch practice because it was dirt, mm-hmm. Bristol, it was new, got to see it. But – It made me, you know, it made me remember what watching practice kind of felt like and how that adds to the race weekend. It sets the tone of who's fast, who's slow, who, you know, it sets some storylines. People have good things happen to them in practice, bad things happen to them in practice, engine issues or crashes or problem, whatever, right? You even see some of the disagreements between drivers even play out in practice. So as a broadcaster, practice is a great tool to sort of help you understand what to expect on race day. And it bends the storylines and continues to shape the storylines going into the race. Whereas without practice or qualifying, everybody, me, you, the drivers, everybody goes in there cold and just flips on switch and there we go. And it's a bit awkward and weird to try to shape an event, you know, as a broadcaster from scratch. So I really miss practice and qualifying, and I hope that there's some version of that for us in the future. I don't know that we need to go all the way back to, you know, 6 hours of practice every weekend or whatever, but I hope there's some new version of that going forward once we get opened all the way up and everybody's back at the track.
Jared Lyons asks, what are your thoughts on iRacing adding the Chicago street course?
That was something we didn't ask Marcus about. We might should have. I think that so iRacing is quickly, over the last couple of years, becoming an incredible asset to NASCAR. That relationship is getting stronger and stronger as NASCAR is starting to see what a great benefit iRacing is to them. Not only are we marketing toward a younger crowd and getting younger people introduced to racing and our, you know, and NASCAR as a series, because when you go on iRacing, you might go on there for the European content or a certain particular car that's nothing to do with NASCAR or stock cars, right? But you learn about all sports, all forms of motorsports, I'm sorry, on iRacing, and your curiosity sort of lets you run all over the place and drive different cars and different tracks. So anyways, those online simulators, video games, and all those other things are a great way to market to that audience or a new audience. But we're also seeing how iRacing and the technology that they use to scan tracks, create tracks, the technology they had to develop all of that software, how NASCAR can use it to experiment, right? To build a new racetrack, to reconfigure a old racetrack, to design a street course. I think that everybody's curious to see what a street course style race would look like for our cup cars and our drivers. And we want to see them in that challenging environment and going through those something they've never done before, right? Just like this past weekend at Bristol on Dirt, it was fun to see them sort of adapt to what was happening. And I think that's what I look forward to if they were ever to go to a street course. I think that Chicago is a town that we certainly would love to be competing in. I don't know what the future is for the racetrack out there. It doesn't look good. So if we can have a street course, something that is only unique to Chicago, that would be incredible for the sport. And I think they're using this as a way to test those waters and see how that might work out and what it might look like. And I think NASCAR is really starting to realize and open their eyes to using iRacing as that tool to sort of see into the future and seeing the possibilities on these venues. It's really awesome. As a big fan of iRacing, I'm loving the fact that the organizations such as NASCAR and other organizations as well, other sports governing bodies, are seeing how they can use iRacing to benefit their futures.
All right, guys, that's it for today.
Well, man, there it is. My favorite part of the show is over.
Yep.
Darn.
It goes by fast.
It does.
It goes by almost Xfinity X5 fast.
Well, speed isn't everything, Mike. X5 is also reliable, powerful, and secure.
It is, Dale. That it is. With Xfinity X5, you can do more of what you love with faster internet. You and your crew can stay connected with Wi-Fi coverage that delivers the speed your devices need. Boy, I know yours needs them. I mean, all the stuff you're doing. Oh, yeah, the racing, the online stuff. Oh, my God, yeah. Remember, everyone, send your Ask Junior questions to @XfinityRacing on Twitter.
Well, before we hit the road, we got to thank Xfinity. They're a proud premier partner of NASCAR.
Last call.
right, everybody. It's last call. The Dale Jr. Download. It's on TV. Yeah. I hope you know that by now. It's on NBCSN Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Thursdays are going to be the normal day for Dale Jr. Download TV show moving forward.
Yeah, so if you're listening, Thursdays, that's when you're going to see us on TV more often throughout the rest of the year, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time this week. A new episode of Door Bumper Clear after the Bristol Dirt Race. It'll be out tomorrow. You'll hear from TJ about Joey Logano's win and how TJ was so instrumental in helping Joey steer through the potholes and the tribulations and trials.
Of construction.
Yeah. So, hearing from the other spotters, I don't know if they, you know, their car did any good. Just get their perspective on dirt racing in general and where we go from here. Door Bumper Clear, out tomorrow. Thanks for Marcus Smith coming by. The guy is a busy man. I'm sure he aged rapidly over the weekend with the troubles they had at that racetrack, but they did an amazing job. And I think the whole industry really is recognizing the work they did, and everybody's really so proud of that effort. And they pulled it off. So even with that going on, the delay, the race happening on a Monday, Marcus still came through, answered some questions for us, gave us a great conversation. So we appreciate it, Marcus. Y'all have a great week. This bit of badassery was made by Dirty Mo Media. Dirty Mo!